Today we are in Daniel chapter number 8. And I really love this particular vision in the book of Daniel because it provides some of the keys that help us decipher other visions in the book of Daniel, but also in prophecy within the Bible as a whole. So Daniel chapter 8 starts with this chronological connection. It says, in the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared to me, Daniel, after that which appeared to me at the first. So this vision takes place a couple of years after chapter number 7's vision. The exact date cannot be pinned down with precision, other than we can say it's somewhere in the 540s BC, shortly before the Babylonian Empire is replaced by the Medo-Persian Empire. And we know that that will take place at the beginning of the 530s BC. So more than likely, we're talking somewhere in the neighborhood of 547, 546 BC. Daniel has now been in exile for about 59, maybe 60 years. So he must be in his 70s by now. And Jerusalem has lain in ruins for about 41 or 42 years. So we are well past that time period, which means also that the 70 years of timeout, the 70 years of desolation, are starting to come to an end. It won't be too much longer, and Daniel will be asking specifically about that ending. But in this chapter, God prepares Daniel for the shift between empires that has already been indicated in a couple of different prophetic ways to him. So verse 2 says, I saw in the vision, and when I saw, I was in Susa, the capital or the fortified city, which is in the province of Elam. Now, Elam was a semi-independent region on the east side of the Babylonian Empire. It's right in the borderland between Babylon and their former ally, the Medes and the Persians. At this point, Daniel recognizes this city of Susa, but it will not be too much longer before this capital is absorbed, this whole region of Elam is absorbed into the growing Median and Persian Empire. And so I think that's one of the reasons that God takes Daniel in the vision to this city in the transition zone between the current Babylonian Empire and the coming Medo-Persian Empire. And this is what he sees there at this transition site. I saw in the vision, and I was at the Ulai Canal. Waterways are important landmarks, and so that's how he describes that. It's all happening by the, we could call it a river, but it's man-made, so it's a canal. Verse 3, I raised my eyes and saw, and behold, a ram was standing on the bank of the canal. It had two horns. Both horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher one came up last. So just like we had a lopsided bear back in chapter number 7, we now have a lopsided ram. And it's going to symbolize the exact same thing, the Medo-Persian Empire. The Medes were the first senior members of this alliance, but it didn't take too long before the Persians popped up and became much more powerful and prominent in the alliance. And so that's why the Medo-Persian Empire is described represented by lopsided animals. Verse number 4. I saw the ram charging westward and northward and southward. It's not charging eastward because that's its own territory already. Media and Persia. No beast could stand before him, and there was no one who could rescue from his power. He did as he pleased and became great. So the Medo-Persian Empire is growing in prominence, even as Daniel is living at this point. The Babylonian Empire is starting to be a little bit nervous about this former ally of theirs. In fact, they're going to have more and more border skirmishes between the two of them. And by the time 540 BC rolls around, which is just a few years after this vision, Elam will be absorbed by the Medes and the Persians into their growing empire. So it's not surprising that they are a significant player in this vision. But the focus is going to be on the end of their empire. Verse 5. As I was considering, behold, a male goat came from the west across the face of the whole earth without touching the ground. So here comes a goat, and it's moving so fast that its feet are not even on the ground. So speed is an important element in this next empire. The goat had a conspicuous horn between his eyes. So it's a unigoat. He came to the ram with the two horns, which I'd seen standing on the bank of the canal, and he ran at him in his powerful wrath. And I saw him come close to the ram. He was enraged against him and struck the ram and broke his two horns. And the ram had no power to stand before him, but he was cast to the ground and trampled on him. And there was no one who could rescue the ram from his power. So here comes this unigoat, and it slams into the ram. And it knocks the ram down. It breaks its two horns, and it stomps the thing into the ground. So what we have presented here, Daniel's watching it. He understands this. Some kingdom from the west is going to come into the upper Middle East and slam into the lopsided Medo-Persian Empire and take it down. And then it, that new power player, is going to become the ruler of the Middle East. Verse 8, then the goat became exceedingly great, but when he was strong, the great horn was broken. And instead of it, there came up four conspicuous horns toward the four winds of heaven. Now, we already have information that we can put forward here from other passages, because this is a nice key passage, that this is certainly the Macedonian Greeks that we're talking about here. They come with speed. Alexander the Great is their first big leader. They come with speed across Asia Minor, what we call Turkey today, and they slam into the Medo-Persian Empire, and within a very short period of time, just a matter of years, take it down. And then spread over not just the Medo-Persian Empire lands, but also through lands all over the upper and lower Middle East, from Egypt all the way out to the western end of the Himalayas, in what we call India and Afghanistan, places like that today. So this is the coming of the Macedonian Greeks. Verse number 9. Out of one of them came a little horn. And I'm going to just go ahead and tell you, the little horn here is clearly Antiochus the Fourth. He was one of the leaders that come out of the Syrian portion of the Macedonian Greek Empire of Alexander the Great. One of the things we know historically, which plays into the every time we hear the Greeks mentioned here, is that once Alexander was dead and gone, his kingdom was divided up into basically four major kingdoms. And the Syrian kingdom just north of Israel was one of those four. And Antiochus the Fourth, who becomes king in 175 BC, causes the Jewish people a great deal of trouble. In fact, we will have lots of detail ahead of time about this guy. So out of them, or out of one of them, came this little horn, which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, toward the glorious land, reference to Israel. It grew great even to the host of heaven. Usually the host of heaven is a reference poetically to angels. Some of the host, some of the stars, it threw down to the ground and trampled on them. Antiochus was very full of himself. He even considered himself to be among the gods. And the gods of the ancient world were typically associated with the fallen angels, if you will. Antiochus actually had coins struck with his image on it, and him presented as Antiochus Epiphanes Theou. That is Antiochus, the brilliant god. And that is his attitude. And so he thinks he's as good as the spirit beings. It became great, that is this horn, Antiochus the Fourth, even as great as the prince of the host, which different ways of thinking about this. Is this a reference to the fact he even thinks he's as strong as the chief angels like Michael and Gabriel? Or is the prince of the host here a reference to the high priest of Israel? Because we know that Antiochus the Fourth, as soon as he comes to power, starts making agreements with renegade Jews, meaning Jewish people who are no longer interested in upholding the Jewish faith. So he makes associations, makes alliances with renegade Jews, including high priests that are renegades as well, to abandon their Jewish culture, their uniquely Jewish culture, and to transition themselves into a much more Greek style of worship of the gods and the goddesses of the Greeks, a sort of an assimilation of Judaism into the Greek god world, where God would just simply be either one of the gods and goddesses of the Greeks, or maybe he would become associated with one particular god of the Greeks, like Zeus. This idea of syncretism, the idea of merging two religions together. So, in the process of doing that, this is what he will do. It says, the regular burnt offering was taken away from him, and the place of his sanctuary was overthrown. And we know beyond a shadow of historical doubt, Antiochus IV is the one that did that. We even have the dates for it. The host will be given over to it together with the regular burnt offerings because of transgression. That is, because of the sins of the Jewish people as a whole. As I already told you, many of them were in the mood of giving up the uniqueness of the Jewish faith and becoming much more Gentile, including Greek religion. And so it will be thrown, it will throw truth to the ground, it will act and prosper. So this is all about Antiochus IV, this horn that's coming off one of the four horns on the unigoat once the original horn was broken off. And we are told next, verse 13, I heard a holy one speaking, that's an angel, and another holy one said to the one who spoke, for how long is the vision concerning the regular burnt offering, the transgression that makes desolate, and the giving over the sanctuary and host to be trampled underfoot? So in other words, how long will the desolation of the temple and the stopping of the regular offering go on before it's reversed? Verse 14, and he said to me, for 2,300 evenings and mornings, then the sanctuary shall be restored to its rightful state. Now, 2,300 evenings and mornings does not mean 2,300 days. Evenings and mornings here are references to the daily sacrifices made in the Jewish temple. They were referred to as the evening sacrifice and the morning sacrifice. The morning sacrifice happened when the sun was halfway up from the horizon toward noon. The evening sacrifice, or I like to refer to it more as the afternoon sacrifice, was offered when the sun was halfway down from noon toward sunset. So the two sacrifices happened roughly, we'd call them 9 a.m., 3 p.m. So in order to get the proper number of days here, we just divide it by two. So 2,300 evenings and mornings, divide by two, and we get 1,150 days. Now, we know exactly when the sacrifices were reinstated, because it is a matter of historical fact. That happened on 9/25 of the Jewish calendar. We'd call it 14 December, in 164 BC. The sacrifices had apparently been stopped 1,150 days earlier, which means that Antiochus must have ordered them to no longer happen starting on the first day of the eighth month of the Jewish calendar, that's 22 October, in 167 BC. Now, we don't have any historical designation for that date stopping the sacrifices, but the historical record does say right around that time it happened, that the order was put out that no more sacrifices should occur. We know that subsequently, after that order went out, the temple was rededicated to the Greek god Zeus, and that a Greek altar was built over the Jewish altar on the 15th day of the ninth month. That's 7 December. And then a Greek-style sacrifice of a sow was made on that altar on the 25th day of the ninth month of 167 BC. That's 17 December. So the sacrifice is stopping on the first day of the eighth month, just a month and a half before the abomination of desolation was made. That makes good historical sense. And so I believe we can count this as being fulfilled on that date. So that was the vision he saw. This is the detailed explanation of it that he's given, starting in verse number 15 of Daniel 8. When I, Daniel, had seen the vision, I sought to understand it. Behold, there stood before me one having the appearance of a man. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of the Ulai, and it called, Gabriel, make this man understand the vision. So here is the angel Gabriel that comes into our story. He looks like a human being, but we know he is one of God's angels. And he is given instruction from a voice above the river, probably the voice of God, although I suppose it could be the voice of another angel, perhaps Michael. But the instructions are, explain the vision to Daniel. Verse 17, so he came near where I stood. When he came, I was frightened and fell on my face. Well, wouldn't you be frightened if an angel of God approached you, probably glowing and powerful, and you would certainly be scared as to what was going to happen next. But he said to me, understand, O son of man, that the vision is for the time of the end. Now the time of the end that's being referred to here is not the time of the end of the world. We've got to break this habit of every time we see the words the end, associating them with the return of Jesus Christ, because it's not always the case in Scripture that the end refers to that period. In this case, the end is the end of the Medo-Persian Empire and the beginning of the Macedonian Empire and the coming of this horned leader that's going to take away the sacrifices, but that will be reversed. So if we must pin it down, the end here is the end of the desolation of the temple in 164 BC. That's the end. So he's told that this has got a point in mind to help the people, the Jewish people, understand that what's coming in the future, this crisis that's coming eventually, it will be resolved. There will be an end to it. Verse number 18. When he had spoken to me, I fell into a deep sleep with my face to the ground. Sounds like he probably passed out. But he touched me and made me stand up. And he said, behold, I will make known to you what shall be at the latter end of the indignation. That is, the indignation being the desolation of the temple, the desecration of the temple with that Greek sacrifice being made to Zeus. For it refers to the appointed time of the end. As for the ram that you saw with the two horns, these are the kings of Media and Persia. Full explanation right there. We don't need to guess. It's right there in the text in front of us. The goat is the king of Greece. Boom. No explanation needed other than this is definitely the Greek Empire. The great horn between his eyes is the first king. That would be Alexander the Great, just as I've already explained. As for the horn that was broken in place of which four others arose, four kingdoms shall arise from his nation, but not with his power. The Macedonian Empire of Alexander the Great was broken into four key regions. None of them were as powerful as him. At the latter end of their kingdom, when the transgressors have reached their limit, a king of bold face, one who understands riddles, shall arise. His power shall be great, but not by his own power, and he shall cause fearful destruction and succeed in what he does and destroy mighty men and the people who are the saints. That's Antiochus IV. And he was a very braggadocious man. In fact, he stole the kingdom from his nephew, who was only, I think, 10 years of age whenever Antiochus's brother died as the previous king. And so Antiochus just says, I'll be the new king. My nephew is not old enough or ready. And so he seizes control. And then he uses force to make everyone do what he wants. He tries to take over Egypt, doesn't get it done. And when some of the religious Jews start rebelling against him, he comes and tries to wipe out the Jewish faith. So that's how bad he is. Verse 25, by his cunning, he shall make deceit prosper under his hand and in his own mind. He shall become great. Remember what I told you. He thought of himself as the brilliant god Antiochus. Without warning, he shall destroy many. I think the casualty figure amongst the Jews is well over 100,000 under his reign of terror. By his cunning, verse 25 continued, he shall even rise up against the prince of princes, and he shall be broken. So the prince of princes, either God himself, or perhaps the angels that represent God, or maybe the high priest who represents God. But he shall be broken, but by no human hand. The Jewish historical documents basically say God struck him down with some sort of illness first, but also an accident which threw him from a chariot and ended his life. He shall even rise up against the prince of princes. He shall be broken, but by no human hand. The vision of the evenings and the mornings that's been told is true, but seal up the vision, for it refers to many days from now. So seal it away until the people going through it can read about it. And I, Daniel, was overcome and lay sick for many days. Then I rose and went about the king's business, but I was appalled by the vision and did not understand it. Come back tomorrow, and we will see another story that comes from the book of Daniel.